Hey everyone, welcome again to the newcomers. I'm Janet. I've recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia. Super excited to talk about my favorite chapter of the big book, We Agnostics. So if you have your book, we are on page 44. Actually, I'm going to go back to the last paragraph on page 43, more about alcoholism, where it starts once more. They're hammering it home to us one last time before we turn the page. And they say the alcoholic or the compulsive eater has no effective mental defense against the first drink or the first compulsive bite. We can't think our way out of it. We can't remember the last binge strongly enough to deter us. Says, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. So as much as all of you may love me, you can't be my defense. His defense must come from a higher power, capital H, capital P. And where are we to find this power? Let's turn the page to page 44. Steph, can you read the first paragraph, please?
Absolutely. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer.
Thanks. So it starts out by telling us, like, okay, you've already learned something of alcoholism. So before we start talking to someone about God, we want to make sure that they really understand what this illness is and how our think we can't think our way out of it. We can't manage our way out of it. And it says, okay, here's how to tell if you are a real compulsive eater. If when you honestly want to, you can't quit, or when you start, you can't stop, you're probably an alcoholic or a compulsive eater. So I remember my first 6-7 years in OA, I didn't get better. I was going to meetings. I was like turning over my food, doing assignments, had sponsors, and I didn't get better. And I'm sure people said about me, although they didn't say it to my face, she doesn't really want to get better. Because so often we confuse desire with power. But the definition of an addict is someone who wants to stop and is unable to. And again, page 24 really hammers this home, that there comes a point in the life of every abnormal drinker or eater where the most powerful desire to stop means nothing. And so then they tell us, as Steph just read, well, if that's the case, if that's you, then you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Well, a couple of interesting things there. They call it an illness, which is kind of weird because what they're really saying is this isn't a question of willpower. It's an illness. And it's an illness that they say needs a spiritual experience because it's a spiritual malady. Page 64 tells us once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, right? So if I have a spiritual problem, it requires a spiritual solution. And what do they say it is? A spiritual experience. Well, what exactly is that, a spiritual experience? And that's defined on page 25. So we should know like what the solution is, right? If I have pneumonia, then my doctor will tell me that the solution is penicillin. So I know that penicillin are these little tablets and I take them twice a day for 10 days and that's it. They're telling us our solution is a spiritual experience. And we can't just go to CVS and buy one, but here's what it is, page 25. The great fact is just this and nothing less. Guys, we should not settle for anything less. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, and here's what it is, something that revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, so there's a change, and the central fact becomes the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. That is the solution to the compulsive eating problem. A spiritual experience revolutionizes our attitude. Whenever I hear that word revolution, I think of Les Mis, right? Where they started the French Revolution because they were oppressed. Well, they lost, but here God wins. That when we surrender to Him and start practicing the principles of this program, He basically rewires our hearts so that my priorities become more like His priorities. My attitude towards other people, towards the world, becomes more like His. And they say, how does this happen? Because our Creator, God, has entered into our hearts. And He doesn't just enter and like put His boots up and watch Netflix. He goes to work renovating. And what He does is miraculous. So that's what we need. We need that renovation job by God. So how do we get it? Well, first they tell us what doesn't work and what we need to do. So back on page 44, it says, if you feel you're an atheist or agnostic, this experience seems impossible. I love how they say it to one who feels he's an atheist or agnostic, because it's like they're saying, yeah, really, there really aren't any, because as we see on page 55, God has put in every man, woman, and child the fundamental idea of Himself. So we think we're atheists or agnostics. And they say, okay, you either need to try and move past that or continue on to your doom. And they acknowledge these aren't easy alternatives to face. But then they go on and they say, but it isn't so difficult. Well, it probably sounds difficult to someone who feels they're an atheist and agnostic. And they say, you know, about half the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous felt that exact same way. And it says, okay, we try to avoid the issue. Maybe I'm not that bad. Maybe I don't need it as badly as those people do. And it says, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life. And then it's like, dun, 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 or else. A spiritual basis of life. What does that mean? We trust God. We clean up the wreckage of our past. We pray and meditate to get into a deeper relationship with God. And then we help others. That's basically the program in a nutshell. And it says, okay, don't be disconcerted. Don't be afraid if you think you're an atheist or agnostic. And then they tell us, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcoholism or compulsive eating, we would have all recovered. Well, what is that? A mere code of morals. I mean, I think probably the most common one I can think of is like the Ten Commandments. But they say, okay, you can try to follow the Ten Commandments or any other moral or philosophical code, but it doesn't work. And I love the wording on page 45. It says, these codes and philosophies don't save us. I needed to be rescued, right? If I'm drowning, all my codes and philosophies aren't going to do anything. It says, no matter how much we tried, right? If I'm in an undertow, it doesn't matter how much I try. They say, we could wish to be moral and philosophically comforted with all our might, but our human resources failed. It says the needed power wasn't there. Why not? Because God doesn't work with just that this quick mumbled prayer. And it says the needed power wasn't there. And the way I like to think of it is this. This requires 100% commitment. And if I need God's power, I like to think of it like back to the stuff we all learned in, I think like eighth, ninth grade, about the kings who had the serfs. And then there's the moats with the drawbridges. And if I'm a serf on the king's land, then when the, you know, bad guys attack the marauding army, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but you know what I mean. The bad guys attack and the king pulls up the drawbridges. If I'm on the king's land, I'm safe and protected. But if I've wandered off, it's not that the king doesn't care about me anymore. I've made a choice to wander off. So this program is going to teach me how to make my way back to the land where I can be safe and protected. And they tell me, first of all, what my problem is. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Not lack of desire, not lack of a good moral code, lack of power. So that's really good to know, because if we want to solve a problem, we always want to know what the problem is, right? If I'm coughing, I could have like just a cough because I've been around secondhand smoke. I could have bronchitis. I could have COVID. And the treatment is different depending on what's the problem. If the problem is bronchitis, then I get the antibiotic and I get better. So our problem is lack of power. So our solution, they tell us, has to be to find a power by which we could live. And it has to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, right? Because if I had enough power, I wouldn't be spending my time on Zoom meetings and, you know, pre-pandemic in church basements. And they say, okay, but where and how are we to find this power? And then that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find, and here's our first clue about God, to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Okay, so if we're atheist or agnostic, and we read this and we say, okay, there's a power greater than myself, which can solve my problem. And we look around and we see it's happened for so many others. We have to say, yeah, there's something going on. So if this power can solve my problem, that tells me four things about this power. First, it has to have a consciousness, right? Because a hurricane is a power greater than I am, but it can't figure out even how to do 1 + 1, let alone solve my problems. It has no consciousness. This power has to be smart, because I have 2 master's degrees and I couldn't figure out how to solve this problem. So this power has to be smarter than I am. And this power has to be strong, because this illness is stronger than me. If I have like 1 unit of power and the illness has like 10 units of power, this higher power with a capital P has to have at least 11 units of power. We'll find out he has infinite power, but let's go with 11 for now. And then the last, and I think the most important thing, this power must care about me. Otherwise, why would he bother trying to solve my problem? So has a consciousness, smart, strong, and cares about me. So our first clue's about God. And it says, that's what this book is about. We've written a book which is going to be spiritual, my relationship with God, and moral, how I live, how I relate to other people. And it says, we're going to talk about God. This may be difficult for agnostics. New people like when they learn about the alcoholic problem, they get an understanding of it. And if anyone wants like a full understanding, on our website under recoveryjam.com, there's a page, Other Resources, and there's a 1-page article called The Broken Bridge, which really captures the essence of what it means to be powerless. So a person knows about powerlessness, and then fellowship. Well, most of us love fellowship, right? And it says, yeah, but then their face falls when we talk about God. And then they tell us, we know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. So when we think of prejudice, we generally think of feeling superior to people of other races, religions, cultures, things like that. But they use the word prejudice in a different way. They're using it as a preconceived idea that we have about God that keeps us from God, that keeps us from believing in God or being willing to have a relationship with God. So here are the prejudices that were in this, that are in this paragraph. It says, the way we were brought up with God, to believe about God, it doesn't work. We were given a concept that doesn't work for us. We think that if we believe in God, it makes us weak. We say we can't believe in something we don't understand. We say, if there was a God, if there really was a God, he wouldn't run this universe so poorly. He wouldn't allow war and poverty and human trafficking or my kids to make some of the decisions that they've made. So we say, you know, there can't be a God. Or if I really believe in God, then I can't do what I want. Right? If we're cheating on our income taxes and we say, you know, if I believe in God, I may not be able to cheat on my taxes anymore. So those are a lot of prejudices that we have against believing in God. And it says, okay, you may be enchanted by a starlit night and have a feeling of awe and wonder. Guys, I used to do that. Look up at the stars and think I was so spiritual. Thinking that a starry night is beautiful, it's wonderful, it doesn't get us recovered, it doesn't mean we're spiritual. So it tells us, okay, here are some prejudices, but now we're going to reassure you. We're on page 46. As soon as we're able to lay aside prejudice, so a good way to do that is to look at those prejudices and think our way through them and think, okay, the concept of God I was given as a child is insufficient. I could say, okay, well, I can choose a new concept. I don't have to use the concept that I grew up with. Or if we say, well, if there was a God, why would he allow human trafficking? You know, that I can say, you know what? I don't understand why God does what he does, but my way surely doesn't work when it comes to overcoming compulsive eating. And here's all these other people who say once they gave their lives to God, their obsession with food has been removed and their life works. So we can lay aside our prejudice and express, it says, even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves. So this is how that can go. I call this my I'm not sure prayer. And it's fine, the willingness prayer. God, I'm not sure if you exist. And if you do exist, I'm not sure if you care about me. But if you do exist and you do care, help me to find you. I need some help. And as I said, the worst thing that happens is, okay, maybe you're right and there is no God. So you're just like talking to the air. But they say that willingness really does something. And I have a note in the margin from Herb K. Willingness opens the door to grace. And maybe that prayer will be the thing that causes God to kind of want to pack his bag and set up shop in your heart. So it says, as soon as we're able to lay aside prejudice, so we have to look at our prejudices and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results. So just put that in the back of your head a second. Next paragraph tells us what these results are. even though it was impossible for any of us, that means the most newest newcomer to the person who's been around 70 years, any of us to fully comprehend or define that power, which is God, not the group, not the doorknob, God. And they say, okay, but we don't have to consider another's conception of God. We can have our own conception as long as it makes sense. And that's sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. Think of that word, contact. We're not just going to have a belief in God. We're going to have a contact. We're going to have a relationship with God. And now we start to make the approach. And then it says, as soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, here's what we get. Here's the results. We began to be possessed of a new sense of power. That's my problem, right? Lack of power. And in step two, I get my first infusion of power. I picture it like a pick line of grace going straight into my heart. Power and direction. So we start getting an idea of like, what we're supposed to do in life. There's a caveat, provided we took other simple steps. So I can't stop with, okay, God, I'm willing to believe you exist. Now I'm just going to snap my fingers and you come down like some genie in a bottle and just rewire my heart and remove my food obsession. We have to keep going. We have to clean up our past. We got work to do. But at this point, all we have to do is be willing to believe that there is a God. And they say, he doesn't make too hard terms with those who seek him. The realm of spirit is broad, meaning any religion or no religion. Rumi, all inclusive, never exclusive to those who earnestly seek. And the 12 steps are a way that we seek him. Page 47, they again reiterate, we can choose our own conception of God. And that's all we need to make our beginning. And it says, we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And I looked up the definition of the word willing, and I loved it. It says, accepted by choice. We can make a choice, right? If we're not sure there's a God, it's just as easy to believe that God probably does exist than to believe that God probably doesn't exist. And we have so much evidence for God's existence just in each other. So it's a willingness to believe. And it says, as soon as we do that, we're on our way. And then it's like, okay, this is great news. Because some people think we can't make use of spiritual principles unless we accept many things on faith, unless we believe in God. And now it's like, whoa, wait, what are they talking about? We have to make use of spiritual principles. Remember, earlier in this book, it says faith without works is dead. So yes, we have to believe in God. But right off the bat, even before we have anything beyond an embryonic belief, we have to start practicing spiritual principles. Karen M. made a list of all the spiritual principles in the big book. They are on our website under other resources. But the basic principles, we have to start being honest. If we're not honest, it's like we've taken a big black magic marker and we write the words, keep out God right across our hearts. God will not coexist with dishonesty. We practice self-sacrifice, doing things for other people that are costly to us, and other spiritual principles. So it says we can start doing that right away. We don't have to wait until, you know, we have a really solid belief in God. We do what we know. A friend of mine, a recovered alcoholic, said, when someone goes to AA, like from day one, they can stop lying and stop stealing. So we can do that. You know, we can start practicing spiritual principles. top of page 48, it tells us some things that handicap us. Obstinacy, which is a stubborn refusal to change our opinions. Sensitiveness, which is really pride, right? You can't tell me anything because then I'm just going to fall to pieces. And unreasoning prejudice, prejudice that I'm not willing to look at. And it says this kind of thinking has to be abandoned. And it says, okay, we may have resisted at first, but it really wasn't so hard when we were faced with alcoholic destruction. That made us open-minded. And they say alcohol, or for us food, is the great persuader that beat us into a state of reasonableness. So a real first step makes us open-minded, right? I mean, I'm not open-minded about chemo at all now, not one bit. I'm not interested, don't want it, don't talk to me about it. But if I go to my doctor and he shows me some kind of scan that tells me I have like stage 3 cancer and chemo's my only shot, suddenly I may be interested in hearing about chemo. So someone isn't interested in God and really is belligerent about it. We can question, is there a real first step? That famous saying, there's no atheists in foxholes. You know, when we're desperate, we're open-minded. And then they, you know, go ahead and say, well, okay, you say, for the person who says, I can't believe in something I don't understand, I'll tell you guys, I don't understand electricity. I know there's wires outside my house, and I know I pay a bill every month, and I know if I flick a switch, the lights come on. But I don't understand how it even gets into the wire, and from the wire into my house, and like, why when I turn this switch here, does something go on across the room? I don't understand it, but I'm not going to say, you know what? Until I understand it, I'm not going to use it. I'm just going to sit in the dark. Of course not. And it says, but, and we do that all the time with things, right? Every time we sit on a chair, we don't generally test the chair first to make sure it's strong enough before we eat things. You know, we don't hire someone to be a tester to make sure it's not poisoned. We do all sorts of things without being sure. But suddenly, when it comes to God, it says on page 49, our perverse streak comes to the surface and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. We read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments. I mean, we go out to prove there is no God stronger than we ever go out to do anything. And it tells us, stop. Look at yourself as an intelligent agent, a spearhead of God's ever advancing creation. I read that today and I just thought how beautiful that is. Like, God has a will for this world, like an ever advancing creation, ways to make this world better. And he wants me to be a part of it. Like, that's really beautiful. That's what God wants for me. And it says, yeah, but instead of looking at that, we just think we're the Alpha and the Omega. And they say, we beg you, they use that term, bottom of page 49, we beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. And it says, we can't be cynical. We can't be prejudiced against people of different religions. What we have to do is see that people who are spiritual come in all different races, colors, and religions. And true spirituality, this is the result: stability, happiness, and useful. That's what we get when we work this program. We become stable. I certainly wasn't stable before. We become happy. I was miserable. And we become useful. I was useless. And it tells us, again, something we can't do. We can't look at one religious person we know who was nasty, the nun who, you know, hit our wrist with a ruler if we went to Catholic school or something like that, and use it as a basis of wholesale condemnation, no black and white thinking. It's like if I meet one Eskimo and they're nasty to me, if I were to go say, all Eskimos are nasty, we can't do that. You know, the same religion that produced the nun with the ruler produced the Mother Teresa. And I think we could say that about pretty much every creed, race, culture, everything. And then they tell us why we tell our stories. Because, you know, there's a wide variation how people approach and conceive of God. So that's why we tell our stories, because we generally find God in different ways. There's a lot of similarities. They all involve seeking and surrender, but different kind of permutations of that. And they say, on one thing, all the people who wrote their stories in the big book agree. And I always think that's funny, like to get two alcoholics to agree on anything. And they're saying they all agree, like 100 of them. One, we believe in a power greater than ourselves. And two, we gain access to this power. And three, this power has, in each case, that means 100% of the time, accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. And they talk about people, they say thousands of men and women who say once they've come to believe in a power greater than themselves and to take a certain attitude toward that power, which is surrender, which we'll talk about when we get to step three, and do certain simple things, God's will, to the best of our ability, what's the result? A revolutionary change. There's that word again, revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. Because when God rewires our hearts, it is impossible to live the same way or to think the same way. We can't. And the illness can't live in that environment. An illness of compulsive eating cannot live in an environment that's God-wired. Can't do it. And it says, in the face of collapse and despair, total failure of human resources. So they're not just talking about people who need to go on a diet. The people who recover are those who feel their life is in collapse. They're despairing. And they, what do they get? What do we get? A new power. Remember, that's my problem, lack of power. Peace. I never had any peace before. Happiness and a sense of direction flowed into them, right? There's that pick line of grace. And when does this happen? Soon after we wholeheartedly, that means 100%, meet a few simple requirements, the requirements of the steps. On page 51, they say, leaving aside the drink question. So even if people are not eating compulsively, there can still be a feeling that life is unsatisfactory until, they say, the consciousness of the presence of God becomes the most important fact of our lives, that there is a God, that he exists, that I can walk with him. And it says, our world has made so much progress in material things, but still in the world of the spiritual, our minds are still fettered, just like they were when Columbus said the world was round. And they talk about even in this century, well, now it would be the last century, how the papers didn't want to talk about the Wright brothers' first successful flight, because flight had always failed before. And the Wright brothers, to me, I love what it says about them, that it was their almost childish faith that they could build a machine that would fly, that was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Not their mathematical ability, but their faith. So the Wright brothers had faith, and they credit that with their ability to make an airplane fly. And they say, okay, drinking, not drinking, eating, not eating, here's this power. And it's not just a power for food, but here's the other things it can help us with. personal relationships, our emotional natures that we can't control, the feelings of misery and depression that we had, for some of us, the inability to make a living or to work up to our potential, our feeling of uselessness, our fear, our unhappiness, our inability to be of real help. And it says, this program, this God can solve these problems too. And I'm just going to finish up tonight, and we'll finish this up next Monday. They say, when bottom of page 52, we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spiritual spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. So if you're still not sure, just talk to some of us and we can tell you our stories. Talk to different ones of us, because we'll all have stories that are the same, but a little different. And it says, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did and does. So we'll stop here and we'll pick up bottom of page 52 next Monday.